ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधिताम् ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधिताम् भगवता नारायणेन स्वयम् भगवता नारायणेन स्वयम् व्यासेन कथिताम् पुराणमुनिना व्यासेन कथिताम् पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीम् भगवतीम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीम् भगवतीम् अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वाम् अनुसन्धतामि अम्ब त्वाम् अनुसन्धतामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी. I said I was going to do just a few words on the ending, the concluding chant of chapter 1, the Om Tat Sat. Okay, so it's on page 20. Well, I did unfold that last week, page 20 of this book, the bottom. But I wanted to say a few words about Srimad Bhagavad Gita and Brahma Vidya Yan Yoga Shastra. Okay, so repeat after me, we'll just chant it one more time. Om Tat Sat, Om Tat Sat, Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su, Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su, Upanishad Su, Upanishad Su, Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre, Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre, Shri Krishna Arjuna Sambade, Shri Krishna Arjuna Sambade, Arjuna Vishada Yoga Nama, Arjuna Vishada Yoga Nama, Pratamodhyayaha, Pratamodhyayaha. Says, Pratamaha Adhyayaha, this first chapter, Nama called Arjuna Vishada Yogaha, the chapter, Yoga here means Sangati chapter. So we went through this last week. So yoga here means sangati. It has the sense of chapter, not yoga in the sense of doing yoga or the sense of karma yoga. So the chapter on Arjuna's vishada, Arjuna's despair, Arjuna's sorrow. Vishada means despair or sorrow. So the first chapter is really dealing with Arjuna's situation that brings him to ask the Lord, ask Krishna for this knowledge. So this first chapter called the... which is named the chapter, the chapter dealing with the despair of Arjuna, is Sri Krishna Arjuna Samvade. It's in the form of a dialogue discussion between the Lord Krishna and Arjuna. Now, so that's in the locative. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. In this Gita, which is taught by Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. So I'll get into that. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. In this Upanishad, which is taught by Bhagavan. Brahma Vidyayam. In which Upanishad Su. Which are the Upanishads. Brahma Vidyayam. Which is the knowledge of, all lokas, the knowledge of Brahma Vidya. Which is a Yoga Shastra. Which is a dialogue between Sri Krishna and Arjuna. Right? So in this Bhagavad Gita, which is all of these things, this first chapter called the Despair of Arjuna, this first chapter now is complete. Yeah, that's the idea. So there are a couple of words I wanted to deal with. The word Bhagavan, it's Bhaga with a vat affix. The vat affix has two meanings. You often see it to mean that which is like something. It's used in an example. So if you have any given word and you put vat after it, it means like that. Like rajuvat, like a rope, or sarpavat, like a snake. But vat also is an affix which is declined. Like an ut-ending affix, a vat-ending affix. And when it's declined, then it means that which possessing whatever the noun is. So here, Bhagavat means that which has Bhaga. So Bhaga is a word that means wealth. So Bhagavat in the nominative, masculine nominative singular, that vat affix is van. So Bhagavan, the masculine singular nominative, the one who possesses Bhaga, wealth. And the wealth, so Bhagavan is the one who possesses the wealth. Then there's some varieties of verses, famous verses that unfold what the nature of that wealth is, that Bhagavan, that Ishwara possesses. Right? So it's called, the Bhaga is called that sixfold wealth. So there's one verse, Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasaha shriyaha jnana vairag yoschaiva shannam bhaga iti ranag. It says, it lists them. Shanna bhagaha means shannam bhagaha means the wealth of these six qualities. Aishwaryasya, overlordship, means the one who has power over all. Aishwarya, the one who is the lord of all. Samagrasya viryasya, the one who enjoys all power. Virya means power or strength or capacity. So samagrasya viryasya, the one who has all, who enjoys all strength, all capacity. Yashaha means yashas, means fame. So the one who is well known in all the quarters of the universe, the one who is well known, the one who is worshipped and acknowledged. Shriya, the one who has all wealth, in the sense that the whole creation belongs to Bhagavan. So everything that is in the creation is Bhagavan's wealth. So the one who has all wealth, Shriya, all fame, all strength, all capacity, all overlordship. The one who has jnanam, all knowledge, omniscient. Jnanam. Vairagya, the one who has complete dispassion. Because since I am everything, there is nothing that I want. There is nothing other than me or separate from me to desire. Vairagya means dispassion, means there's nothing that I need to be whole. Right? And we really understand the meaning of Vairagya as one of the attributes of a mumukshu. Maybe the major attribute of a mumukshu, because with the vairagya it is antakarana shuddhi. But vairagya is often just translated as dispassion and often viewed as something which is negative. Right? I don't want this, I don't want that, I don't want that. That's not what vairagya is. It's not one of these type of things where I have an aversion. Vairagya is not aversion. Often it's thought of as aversion, but it isn't. Vairagya is, I don't need anything to become full. I don't need this to make me full. I don't need this to make me full. The one who doesn't need anything to become full, that one has vairagya. Bhagavan needs nothing to become full because there's nothing that I am not. So from the standpoint of Ishwara, the omniscience and the entire what we call sameshti upadhi. Sameshti means total. Upadhi means this conditioning adjunct. Like for me, what we call vyeshti upadhi. This physical body, right, is limited upadhi. It's a part of the whole. And so from the standpoint of the jiva, I am not all of this. Right? Instead, this body is not all of this. And so there's no identification in terms of things with I am this. From the standpoint of Ishwara, in terms of things, in terms of the upadhi, it is I am this. Not in the sense of words, but in the sense of reality. Right? It's that the abhimana, or the I sense, is reflected off of the entire sameshti upadhi, rather than off a part of it. This is an individual sukshma sharira. Individual subtle body. So this individual subtle body reflects the self and has a limited sense of I because of that, for Agnani. Right? There's a limited sense of I because this my Sukshma Sharira, subtle body, is different from yours. But for Ishwara, the Sukshma Sharira, Hiranyagarbha, is limitless. Right? And so the identification to the sattva is with the entire upadhi. And so this is myself, this is myself, this is myself, this is myself, this is myself. There is nothing that I am not for there to be something to desire. So the vairagya is absolutely complete because I am the whole. For the jivan mukta, the vairagya also is complete because I am the whole. But I am the whole from the standpoint of the self, like the clay of the pot. I am the whole from the standpoint of the very being, which is the truth of all of this. I am the whole from the standpoint of the ananda that I used to seek in objects. Now, simply, my mind just simply abides as fulfilled in myself, which is the content of any ananda I've ever experienced in the world anyway. Right? So that's where the wholeness, that's where the vairagya is for the individual. And the individual also, the jnani, can also say, I am the whole. Why? Because I recognize that my being is the self of all things. And that this body, mind, sense, organs, is part and parcel of Ishwara. And that Ishwara, I recognize, I understand that Ishwara is a manifestation of myself. I understand that. But I don't have the experience of the samishti upadhi. Right? I'm not as a jiva. I'm not omniscient. Ishwara is omniscient. So we say in the Mundaka Upanishad, Ishwara has sarvajñatvam, means recognizing I am the being of all of this. The jiva, the jnani, has sarvajñatvam also, realizing that all of this is only my being. The same there. There is nothing here but myself. But Ishwara has sarvavit. Sarvavit is omniscience in particular, where the entire creation is known, right, as one infinite upadhi, one limitless upadhi. That's what we call Hiranyagarbha or Virat. And so from that experience of omniscience, of absolute power of virya, of absolute power, of absolute omniscience, there is nothing away from me to separate me for there to be anything, even a slightest possibility of a lack of vairagya, because there's nothing that I'm not. So because of that, Bhagavan's wealth, as one of Bhagavan's wealth, is vairagya. Samagrasya vairagyasya means absolute vairagya. Absolute power, because there is nothing apart from all of the capacity, all of the rajas, sattva rajas, and tamas, all capacity is Bhagavan. Jnanam, absolute knowledge. Absolute fame, because another way of looking at the absolute fame, not only is the Lord worshipped in every different culture, also everything that is famous, everything that is famous is Ishwara. Right? Everything that's not famous is Ishwara also. Right? But everything that is famous is Ishwara. That's why we say all of the vibhutis, you know, like the Himalayas are considered as a vibhuti in the creation. You know, the seven wonders of the world, they're considered as vibhutis. Or a person who has an exalted, is an exalted tennis player, a musician, or an exalted dancer. These are all vibhutis. These are all vibhutis of Ishwara. Right? The person can think, this is my vibhuti. But from Ishwara's standpoint, these are all my vibhutis. And so whenever these vibhutis, these glories, are praised, Ishwara is being praised. Because there is no vibhuti. Vibhuti means some exalted or beautiful, exalted situation or condition. Whenever the vibhutis are what are praised, people who have vibhutis or nature, the wonders in nature, etc., those are all vibhutis. Those are the things in the universe that are praised, and those are Bhagavan's vibhutis. So all fame resolves in Ishwara. So either it's praising Ishwara as himself, as the one who is Sarvajnaha, the one who is omniscient and all-powerful and the creator of all, or in praising the creation. Whatever you're praising Ishwara. So the one who is all fame in that way. So Aishwaryasya, overlordship, because it's Ishwara's creation. It'd be like for yourself, in reference to, let's say you have a lucid dream, you have Aishwarya, overlordship of that lucid dream. Right? Because you don't even have, we don't have to talk lucid, but if you talk about it as lucid, then it's closer to Ishwara. The dream comes from you, is sustained by you, right? It resolves into you. It is you. Right? It is you. You can enter the dream is an expression of your being. So because it's an expression of your being, you are the Lord of the dream. So like that, because the creation is an expression of Ishwara, Ishwara has overlordship of the creation, because this is my being, this is my form, my body. So that Aishwaryasya, Viryasya, the all power, Yashas, fame, Shriya, all wealth, because there's all the wealth that is here in terms of the infinite creation, all of that is nothing but Ishwara. Jnanam, all knowledge, all vairagya. These six qualities are the six bhagas, the six wealths. The one who possesses these bhagas, these wealth, the, all of this wealth, is Bhagavan. So Bhagavan, the one who has this wealth. Okay? So that's the etymology of that word. And so here, when we say Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su, the Shri, when Shri is affix to Bhagavan, Shri, the word Shri also means wealth. But when it's a word that's attached to a name, like Bhagavan is the name for Krishna, it's attached to a name, it often stands for the guru, for the teacher. And here now, in this Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan, Krishna, is becoming a teacher to Arjuna. So now it's Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. This Gita, Gita means the song, the teaching in this case. Gita literally means song. But here Gita is that the teaching of Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. So that Shri is Srimat, the one who has the wealth. Again, Mat and Vat mean the same thing. But Shri gives can denote the teacher here. And Krishna is in the form of the teacher. So now, in this Bhagavad Gita, the song of the Lord, who is teaching it, Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su, Upanishad Su, which is an Upanishad. So now, even though the Bhagavad Gita is considered to be a smriti, it's not considered to be revealed knowledge, it's something that came later. And here, it's in the form of the Lord Krishna teaching Arjuna, really, this knowledge, which is the essence, which is the essence of the Upanishads. It would be like if your teacher were to now teach you an Upanishad or teach you the essence of all of the Upanishads, then what the teacher was teaching you would be an Upanishad if what it was teaching was the same as the Upanishad. And so here, what Krishna is teaching is an Upanishad, because the knowledge that's being revealed in the Bhagavad Gita is the knowledge of the Upanishads. And so here, it says, in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su, Upanishad Su, which are the Upanishads, means that they're not separate in terms of knowledge from the Upanishads. It is, now it says, it is Brahmavidyayam. These are all locatives in terms of in this Gita, the first chapter has been taught. Right? So that's where the locative is there. Brahmavidyayam. It is the knowledge of Brahman. The knowledge of Brahman is what the knowledge of the Upanishads are. That's what this Bhagavad Gita contains, is the knowledge of Brahman. But Yoga Shastra, it is also the Shastra, the teaching, the science of Yoga. Hear what they mean by Yoga, Karma Yoga. All of those disciplines and understandings and attitudes of mind which bring about Antakarana Shuddhi, purity of mind that is necessary in order for one to be able to gain this knowledge. So the Bhagavad Gita, one of its great strengths is that not only does it go into very specific, great detail in the unfoldment of the self as Brahman. It also goes into great detail about attitude. You know, what are the attitudes of the that the antakarana needs, that the mind needs, in order to have the relative shanti necessary to hold this knowledge. Right? And there are several places in the Gita, in fact, that simply concentrate on that, like the end of chapter 2 and chapter 13. He goes through all of the qualities, also in chapter 12. Most of chapter 12 is spent on really talking about who is the bhakta, the devotee, in terms of the jnani, the one who's gaining this knowledge. He spends a lot of time talking about kind of the qualities and state attitudes and qualities and states of mind that are necessary for this mind to be available for this knowledge. Otherwise, without these attitudes and qualities, Swamiji's likened it to, I think actually there's a verse that holds this also. It's like trying to carry burning embers in a paper bag, with a newspaper. If you're trying to carry these burning embers in a newspaper, the burning embers just burn right through the newspaper. The mind that doesn't have a certain amount of shanti, mumukshutvam, all of these type of qualities, the knowledge comes in, but the mind just closes over because the mind is too engaged. Yeah, too engaged in, it has too much value for other things, basically that's what it amounts to. Its value is for other things. And so, though that disposition, needs to be, that disposition of the mind that's not conducive for this knowledge, is dealt with in this Bhagavad Gita thoroughly. That's why also Bhagavad Gita is considered this the most useful book for a person who's living in the world. Also because it tells you how to live in the world. And it also, Krishna also says here in the Gita very, very clearly, for antakarana shuddhi, you are much better off living in the world, in your situation, doing whatever work there is to be done, and gaining the strength of mind in that situation, rather than trying to flee it, go live in the forest, where you don't have anything to rub against. Because then what happens is when you come back from the forest, right, back into your situation, then you're triggered all over the place. Yeah. And so if you can't be full and whole in the middle of samsara, right, then you haven't understood. And so this, your what they call the kshetra, your field of experience, your prarabdha, is the best field of experience that you can possibly have for gaining antakarana shuddhi. So let this knowledge take place in the middle of the field. That doesn't mean that you don't want, if you get an opportunity to extricate yourself for a period of time to study or something like that. That's a wonderful thing. But to stay there and not come back to the field works against you. In fact, Swamiji once said, that what works against you most in this teaching is the ashram itself. Because, yes. Because it puts you in such a protected, it's okay for a while. You come, get this knowledge and go. So he says, get this knowledge, go. You stay in a protected environment and become domesticated cats. Uh-huh. Become like domesticated cats. Because you're being taken care of, right? Yeah. You're being taken care of, and then also in an ashram setting, if it's not your ashram, right? You're in, like in for Swamiji, for instance. It's not your ashram. It's Swamiji's ashram. Everybody there is there to study with Swamiji. That's why they're there, to be with Swamiji, to study with Swamiji, to do his work and whatnot. So it's Swamiji's home, and then your position there is a sibling in his home. Right, he's like the father figure, a sibling in the home, right? And you usually don't stay home your whole life, you know. You stay, you grow, you mature, you do seva while you're there. Like when you're home, growing up in home, you had your chores to do, and your parents were responsible for you, and you got your education, and you learned. It's the same in an ashram. You go there, you stay there, you get your education, you learn, and then you go. And you take care of yourself, you know? And then you go check back in. But what if you just plant yourself there? You can, because of your karma, you may land planted there. It's very tough. It's very tough because you're in that type of situation, you're not allowed to be the center of your world. Right? Because you're living in somebody else's world where they are the center. Right? That's difficult. So you want to gain this knowledge, you know, and then go. So, Swamiji's often talked about that. It's important to realize it too. And so the Bhagavad Gita makes a point of this, right? There's even a verse, I forget where exactly it is now. It talks about the person who runs away to the forest, you know, and sits in meditation worrying about their wealth. You know, you run away from your situation, but you've brought your situation with you.
Wondering how your stocks are doing.
So you and your situation are sitting in the forest away from your situation, thinking about your situation, where there's no way to be in it or to act on it. You've brought your situation with you, but internally, but you've left the situation back at your home, right? Again, it's fine if you're going to study for a while, but if you're not going to study for a while and come back, then it's treacherous. Unless that process is complete, you know, where it doesn't matter to you whether you're at home or you're in the forest or you're in the city or you're in India or you're in San Francisco or you're in Berkeley or wherever you are. You're the center of your being. You are the center of your being and your mind sits there. If you're in India, you're the center of your being and your mind sits there. If you're in San Francisco, you're the center of your being. Your mind sits there, so you're always home. Sometimes Swamiji talks about himself as a Jagat Guru because he might be here, he might be in San Francisco, or he might be in Australia, or he might be in India. He's traveling all over. He used to travel all over every place. And wherever he was home because he was his own home. He was the home for his mind. And so like that, we have to be the home for our mind, and in order to do that, the best field that we can have is one that we can rub up against. Right? That becomes our sadhana. So in fact, the whole life becomes the sadhana. Your life becomes your sadhana for that antakarana shuddhi. And that's really the standpoint of the Bhagavad Gita. So it's brahmavidyayam, you know, the knowledge of brahmavidya, which is the also, Yoga Shastra is equal in that. That's why it's considered such a beautiful and valuable book. So every section will end with this, just exactly the same, except giving the chapter. Right. So this first chapter is Arjuna's despair. So let's look at the beginning of chapter 2. Sanjaya Uvacha. Sanjaya uvacha tam tatha kripaya vishtam tam tatha kripaya vishtam ashrupurnakulekshanam vishidantamidam vakyam uvacha madhusudanaha. So now the chapter 2 starts out with Sanjaya coming in as the third person. He's the narrator of this, okay? So Sanjaya Uvacha. Sanjaya says, Sandhi, tam tata kripaya avishtam, ashru, purna, akula, ikshanam, vishidantam, idam, vakyam, uvacha, madhusudanaha. Okay. Now, if you remember at the very end of chapter 1, Sanjaya again was speaking, he says, Arjuna having given all of his logic to the Lord, why he really shouldn't fight, how wrong this was, that there was nothing good to be gained of it, after giving his whole reasoning to Krishna, he then sat down in the middle of his chariot, right there in the middle of the battlefield, and his arrows, right, he dropped his bow and his arrows, and he sat there with his mind totally overwhelmed with sorrow, totally overcome with sorrow, and he just plopped himself down there. And then, now, so that's how it was left. There's one really interesting verse before that. Right before that, he says to Krishna, you know, he thinks it would be better for me, you know, if the sons of Dhritarashtra would just kill me, if I just remained unarmed and didn't retaliate, and let them kill me, I would be better off if that were to happen. This is how, and then he plops himself down and waits for Krishna to speak to him. After having really spent all of the last several verses of chapter 1 giving all of his logic as to why this was a no-win situation. And he presented very thorough logic. So that's what we've kind of done in this first chapter. So now, he says, Tam tata kripaya vishtam ashrupurnakulekshanam vishidantam idam vakyam uvacha madhusudanaha. Madhusudana has a name for the Lord, for Krishna. The one who is the slayer of Madhu. We went over this before. The slayer of Madhu, which is the name of a demon. But the word Madhu also means honey, that which is sweet, right? But Madhu was the name of a demon. There's a whole story on Krishna slaying this demon. And so he got the name of Madhusudana. But Madhu can also be taken as the ahankara. So Swamiji in his commentary on this talks about this. The one who slays the ahankara, the I notion, the one who, in other words, the one who removes ignorance. It's another way of looking at Madhusudana, taking Madhu to mean honey. Honey, that which is sweet. So that I is that which is most beloved to us. So the one who slays the demon, the ahankara, the false I. Okay. So the Lord, as Madhusudana, Madhusudanaha uvacha. Madhusudana says vakyam, these words, right? Vakyam uvacha Madhusudanaha. He says these words. To who? Tam tata. To him, tata, who is in this matter at the beginning. Tam tata. To him, tata, in who is it like this? To him in this manner. Like what? Kripaya vishtam. To him who is overcome with kripa, with compassion. Kripaya vishtam. Ashrupurna akulekshanam. Whose eyes are full with tears. Ashru means tears. Purna, the eyes are brimming. His sight, his vision is now covered over, filled with tears. So you can see, so this is talking about Arjuna. He's overwhelmed with compassion. His eyes are brimming with tears. Vishidantam, grieving in sorrow. Okay. So Vishidantam is a I think it's a present participle in the accusative singular. So Madhusudana says idam vakyam, this sentence, these words, okay, idam vakyam, to him, over to Arjuna, the one who's overwhelmed with compassion. Grieving, his eyes filled with sorrow. And this is this is Arjuna's state. He sees no way that he can act one way or the other. He has no idea at this point what to do. And he's put in a position where, and he's seen right in front of him on both sides, the people that mean everything to him. His whole family, the people that he's attached to, the people that he loves, and he sees no way except to just sit down, and he'd rather be killed at this point. So now, Bhagavan comes in. So, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kutastwa Kashmalamidam, Kutastwa Kashmalamidam, Vishame Samupastitam, Vishame Samupastitam, Anaryajushtamaswargyam, Anaryajushtamaswargyam, Akirtikaram Arjuna, Akirtikaram Arjuna. So, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Bhagavan says, Kutaha Twa Kashmalam Idam, Vishame Samupastitam, Anarya Jishtam Aswargyam, Akirtikaram Arjuna. Says, hey Arjuna, vocative Arjuna, hey Arjuna, Kutaha, from where, Twa Kashmalam Idam, this kind of dejection. Kashmala means like dejection of mind, depression. Kashmalam Idam, Vishame, this depression, this lowliness, this dejection of mind, Kashmalam Idam, Vishame, in this locative singular, Vishame, in this difficult, painful, I mean, this terrible situation, right? In this very dangerous and difficult situation, Vishame, Samupastitam, from where has this this dejection of mind come from? Samupastitam, for you. How did you get this? How did this happen to you? So he's saying, from where did this come? How did you get this? That twa is in the accusative singular. Where did you get this? How did this happen? Here we are in this terrible, very difficult situation, and you're falling apart. How did this happen to you? Anarya jishtam. This behavior isn't fitting for a noble person, a person of your ranking, you know, for a kshatriya, a person who knows the dharma, a person who's a prince, one of the most noble people, one of the nobility in the society. This isn't how an arya, you know, a person of your ranking, of your nobility, would behave. It's anarya jishtam that unnegates arya anarya. It's anarya jishtam. It's not the behavior of a noble person, of somebody of your stature. And it is aswargyam. What you're doing will not lead to swarga. You think that that fighting this war will lead to naraka, that it would lead to hell. He says several verses like that. But fighting these people, my gurus and my teacher and my family, and killing all the dharmis, that'll take me to hell. So now Krishna is saying, you think that running away from the battlefield is going to get you to heaven. You're a kshatriya. This is your duty. Everybody's depending on you here. On your side, it's really you and Bhima, right? That the whole army depends on, and it's you and Bhima. And from the other side, looking on, that they are going to fear. If you run away, your army loses its centerpiece. Even for the Yudhishthira, everybody is counting on Arjuna. Arjuna is really the centerpiece of the war, in terms of, on their side, of the Pandavas, in terms of who has all of the strengths, all of the weapons. In fact, Arjuna spent many years with Lord Shiva and Indra collecting special astras, special weapons, you know, to be able to fight this war. Now he has all of the Astras imagined. He got all of Indra's Astras. He worked with Shiva, got so many Astras. For Astras means magical weapons that you can aim with a mantra. And because of the force of the mantra, that will allow that particular Astra to do whatever the mantra enjoins it to do. And so Arjuna has all of these Astras, all of these training. Everybody is counting on him. If he moves, if he runs away, like he thinks that he should do now, or if he just goes and sits in the middle and says, all right, come and kill me, I'm not going to fight, the whole thing will completely fall apart, and Duryodhana and all of the Adharmis on the other side will just laugh. You know? Good. Look at this idiot. Now we can just move through and kill them all and enjoy the kingdom for ourselves, which is exactly what they want. So Krishna now, of course, sees this all clearly and says, I'm sorry, yeah, this is a difficult situation, Vishame. This is difficult. But you can't, don't think you can just run away. This attitude is not going to get you to heaven. It's a swargyam. It won't take you to heaven. And a kirtikaram, it's not going to lead to your fame. Because he's a warrior, you know, and they all have their egos to be, you know, they're great warriors and are deserving of great admiration and respect. And so now Krishna is saying, do you think that the people, the Pandavas on your side will respect you when you sit down, you know, and refuse to fight? What do you think they'll think? Do you think that you're doing the right? Do you think that they will think that you're doing the right thing? Will they hold you in esteem? And do you think? How do you think Duryodhana is going to talk about you when you're sitting there, refusing to fight, or throwing off your bow and your arrow and taking the little pot for bhiksha, you know, and putting on sannyasa and kind of hobbling away, you know? So what do you think? What do you think that Duryodhana, you know, and all of Dushasana and all of these guys are going to think of you? Do you think they're going to be praising you? Or are they going to be poking fun of you? And what do you think your gurus, Bhishma and Drona, what are they going to say? Are they going to be proud of you because you're scampering off? They have to be on their on that side. They have to be on that side because of their own dharma. But they trained you. And then to see you snivel off, they're not going to like this. So Arjuna, hey, where did you get this? How did this happen to you? This isn't you. So he goes, next verse. Klaibhyam masmakamav parata. Klaibhyam masmakamav parata. Naitat twayipupadjate. Naitat twayipupadjate. Shudram hudayadar balyam. Shudram hudayadar balyam. Chektvotishta parantapa. Chektvotishta parantapa. He says, Klaibhyam ma sma gamaha parata. Na etat twayi upapadyate. Kshudram hridaya daurbalyam. Tyaktva uttishta parantapa. So Krishna continues. He says, hey Partha. Partha means the son of Kritu, the son of Kunti. Hey Partha, name for Arjuna. Klaibhyam mas magamaha. Don't become weak like this. Klaibhyam means like miserly. I'll talk a little bit about that. Klaibhyam. Don't become like lowly like this, weak like this. Don't let this happen to you. Ma is a negative. Masma means don't. It's used with imperative. Masma gamaha. Don't go there. Don't go there into this klaibhyam, this kind of miserly, lowly, kind of vile, weak state. Don't go there. Hey Partha, this isn't right for you. This isn't proper for you. Na etat not etat this twayi in you upapadjite is proper. This isn't proper. We shouldn't see this in you. This isn't right. This isn't the right way for you to be. Don't let this type of weakness. Don't go into this type of thing. This isn't correct. Shudram hridaya darbalyam tyaktva, indeclinable past participle tyaktva. Give up, having given up this hridaya darbalyam. Darbalyam means weakness. This weakness of heart, shudram, this lowly, you know, this lowly weakness of heart, shudram hridaya darbalyam. Give up this weakness of heart. Uttishta parintaba. Uttishta. Get up. It's imperative. Please. Get up. Stand up. Parintaba. Parintaba means the one who scorches their foes. Tapa means burns, scorches the other, their opponent. So parintaba, the one who scorches their foes. So Krishna is kind of reminding Arjuna who he is. You're a warrior. You're a kshatriya. You're the one who scorches the foes. Right? Now stand up. Give up this kind of weakness. You've fallen into a state that is not good for you. Now, one thing to remember here, Arjuna has not gone to Krishna at this point to ask him for knowledge. You know, he's not surrendered to Krishna as, please teach me, Bhagavan, I don't know. Please give me this knowledge. He hasn't done that yet. And so Krishna is not responding in that way either. Krishna is Arjuna's friend and is Arjuna's charioteer. And so Krishna is responding to Arjuna on the level that Arjuna is talking to him. So Krishna is saying, Arjuna, as a kshatriya, as a prince, as head of the whole clan of the army here, even Yudhishthira, totally counting on you. You can't fall into this type of a weakness. This is completely inappropriate. Get up. Don't let yourself fall into this. Come on, let's go. You know? Go to your Swamiji talk. So if you read the Swamiji's commentary on this, he really gets into it. But I've heard him teach this. Well, just taking Krishna's Krishna's position. I'm doing a little magnify that about 10 times a year.
He has a dramatic.
Yeah, very, very, very nice. But you know, I mean, you can understand also that. I mean, look at Arjuna's position. You know, he is really stalwart, and he's one of the five Pandavas. Yudhishthira, his brother, is the king. Yudhishthira totally counts on Arjuna and Bhima, but especially Arjuna, you know, to lead this army, to hold it together, to be the one because of whom all these people can be defeated, right? And so he's holding the Dharma. And so you think he's from his position, all he's saying is, I'm going to slay everybody. What Dharma is going to be left? You know, I'm going to be killing all the people who are holding the Dharma. I'm going to be killing all of my family, everybody. So I'm killing all the Dharmis. Where's the Dharma going to be? But Krishna says, oh, what are you talking? What do you think is going to happen if you leave? You're not thinking. What do you think is going to happen that you leave? That Duryodhana is going to say, well, that's nice. Well, let's just all go home. That's not what's going to happen at all. Everybody will get slain, true. Right? But Dharma will prevail. A Dharma will prevail. Right? A Dharma will slay the Dharma. Right? And they're not going to respect you. They're not going to think that you've done a great thing. They're going to laugh at you and then overtake, right? And get exactly what they believe is theirs. So this isn't going to work. It is a difficult situation. But your running out on it is not going to improve it. It's not like you can run out of it on it and then Dharma will be saved. Or you will run out on it and the Dharmis will be saved. Nobody's going to be saved. Right? If you run out, nobody's going to be saved and you'll just be making a fool of yourself. So don't do it. Get up. Fight. So, it says, Arjuna Uvacha. Arjuna Uvacha. katam bhishmamaham sankhe, katam bhishmamaham sankhe, dronam cha madhusudana, dronam cha madhusudana, ishubhiv pratiyotsyami, ishubhiv pratiyotsyami, pujarha varisudana, pujarha varisudana. Arjuna uvacha, Arjuna says, katam bhishmam aham sankhye, dronam cha madhusudana, ishubhihi pratiyotsyami, pujarhau, that's our, I see, pujarhau adisudana. He says, hey Madhusudana. Now he addresses, again, he addresses Krishna as Madhusudana, the slayer of Madhu, the one who slays the demons, and Adisudana. This is another address that Arjuna uses for Krishna. The one who slays the demon Madhu, the one who slays the Adis, all of the enemies. In a way, he's saying, okay, Krishna, you are so good at slaying all of the enemies and all of the demons. This is not the situation here. I'm not slaying enemies and demons here. So he says, aham bhishma maham sankhe, how dronam cha madhusudana, he says, ishubhihi pratiyotsyami, he says, how can I kill pratiyotsyami, how can I battle pratiyotsyami, how can I battle, katam means how, aham I, pratiyotsyami, how can I battle, how can I fight, bhishma sankhye in battle, dronam cha and drona, how can I fight bhishma and drona in battle, who are puja arhal, who deserve my worship. Bhishma and drona are his teachers. Bhishma is the grandsire of the entire clan. It's like his grandfather, who's brought up both sides, the Kauravas and the Pandavas. And so Bhishma is the most revered figure. He's the guru, you know. He's the grandsire. And so he's the one that all the Kauravas, with all of the Kauravas, including Dhritarashtra, all of them will pranam to Bhishma. Right? Pranamsing, bow down to Bhishma. So he's the grandsire. Drona is Arjuna's teacher, his guru. He's the one that, Drona is the one that taught the Kauravas and Pandavas the whole art of archery and warfare. And so Drona is his guru. Bhishma is the grandsire of the whole clan. Both Bhishma and Drona are on Duryodhana's side, not because they want to be, but because of dharma. Bhishma has a commitment. He must protect the king. Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana are holding the kingdom now. Drona is had relied on Duryodhana for all of his pleasures and wealth. And so now, having taken pleasures and wealth and security from Duryodhana, he's not dharmically in a position to fight him. And so both Bhishma and Drona feel bound by dharma to have to fight on the side of the king. Right? And so here Arjuna is on the other side, looking at Bhishma and then looking at Drona, both of whom he worships and pranams to and sees as their teacher. Just imagine somebody, you know, imagine having Swamiji on the other side. I mean, what a horrible idea. I can't even think of it. But there's something similar to that in the magnitude of the situation for Arjuna. He's really looking at his gurus, his teachers, and his grandsires on the other side. So he says to Krishna, Krishna, O slayer of enemies, slayer of demons, you know, how can I fight Bhishma and Drona? So he's as well saying, Bhishma and Drona aren't demons. They're not enemies. They're people who are deserving of my worship. So you can imagine Arjuna feels a little bit stung by, he doesn't feel understood. You know, because Krishna has come back so hard. Even after Arjuna had given so much that he thought was really good logic. And now, Krishna says to me, what are you talking? Stand up. Fight. Don't fall into this lowliness. And then Arjuna is defending himself. Well, wait a minute. These are not my enemies. How can I possibly do this? You know? So then he says, Gurun ahatwa hi mahanubhavan. Gurun ahatwa hi mahanubhavan. Shreyo bhoktum baikshamapi haloke. Shreyo bhoktum baikshamapi haloke. Hatwarta kamans to guru nihaiva. Hatwarta kamans to guru nihaiva. Punjiya bhogan rudira pradigdhan. Punjiya bhogan rudira pradigdhan. Okay, we'll do that next week. Just take a minute. Om Purnamada. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.